Well, Donald Trump is back in the White House. The new US president used his inaugural speech to spell out to the American people where his focus would be for the next 4 years. He signed a raft of executive orders, including pardons for nearly everyone who had been charged and convicted of taking part in the insurrection on Capitol Hill 4 years ago. Some have been freed already. Others will be released in the coming hours. He also signed an order declaring a national emergency at the US-Mexico border.
All illegal entry will immediately be halted, and we will begin the process of returning millions and millions of criminal aliens back to the places from which they came. We will reinstate my Remain in Mexico policy. I will end the practice of catch and release. And I will send troops to the southern border to repel the disastrous invasion of our country.
Well, new sources of energy and combating climate change were also in President Trump's crosshairs. The US will withdraw from the Paris Agreement on Climate. That's a legally binding agreement which set a global warming limit of 1.5 degrees. In his speech, the new president reiterated one of his most used catchphrases from the election campaign.
We will drill, baby, drill. America will be a manufacturing nation once again. And we have something that no other manufacturing nation will ever have, the largest amount of oil and gas of any country on earth, and we are going to use it. Let me use it. We will bring prices down, fill our strategic reserves up again, right to the top, and export American energy all over the world. We will be a rich nation again, and it is that liquid gold under our feet that will help to do it.
So immigration and energy, center stage for President Trump in the next 4 years. We're going to explore these in a little more detail now with two people. Jim O'Malley, an immigration lawyer in the United States. He's joining us this morning from New York. And Jenny Stevens is Professor of Climate Justice at Maynooth University. You're both very welcome indeed. Jim, I'll come to you first on immigration. There's two aspects to immigration here under Donald Trump. Those hoping and trying to get into the US at the southern border with Mexico, and then those already in the United States illegally. And for that latter group, he says he's going to deport all illegal immigrants. Now, is that feasible?
Good morning, Audrey. Great to be on the show again. Not really feasible in any practical sense. Successive administrations have tried to do this or pretended to try to do it, but it's not really feasible. No, it's a, and the 11 million number is probably underrated. I would say it's more like closer to 20 million.
Why is it not feasible, Jim? Is it because of the scale of the issue and the cost of it?
Partly the scale and the cost, but just alone on the logistics of, let's say, for want of a better term, rounding up people. It's impossible to do so. The U.S. Immigration Service and its enforcement arm called ICE, Immigration Police, so to speak, have tried to do this over, you know, over the last several generations. It doesn't go very well when once it starts. It sounds very strong and tough in theory, but it doesn't go very well once on the ground. It upsets all sorts of issues in communities, in business, in families, and it becomes a highly, highly emotional and illegal controversy.
Because you're talking about people here, and people who are there illegally without documentation, they have their lives there. They may have been there for decades, given birth, raised children, children who are US citizens who work there, their children, perhaps many work for the government in the military. So it's not as straightforward to deport them.
Not at all, no. And again, the system, the immigration system is set up that there are numerous defences to deportation. One of them called, it's a process and it's a part of the law. It's not just an executive order or a policy. It's part of the immigration federal law that's called cancellation of deportation. So if a person is deportable, but they have a defence, and one of the defences is that the deportation of that person would cause extreme hardship to an immediate family member of that person who is an American citizen. That is a defence to deportation. There are several other defences that I won't go into now. They're highly technical in a legalistic sense. Mm. But there are defences. Now, let me just say that throughout the campaign, Donald Trump referred to, we will deport illegal people. We will deport millions of illegal people. Now he's saying, we will deport millions of illegal criminals. Mm. So I guess we'll wait to see what type of criminal. So
well, that's what I was going to say to you, because
the fact that he has been convicted himself.
We were there for Morning Ireland back in November for the presidential election, and speaking to Trump supporters, when I put it to them about the millions who are there, you know, raising families who are US citizens, they said, well, they didn't think Trump would target them. They thought he would focus on illegal immigrants who have committed crimes, that they would be his priority. Are they an easier group of people to deport from the administration's point of view?
Well, I would think so. And I think most people would not object to serious criminal people being deported. People who have committed serious crimes.
Yeah. In terms of the Irish Jim, and who are living in the United States without documentation, they're no different to any other group that we're talking about this morning, are they?
That is correct. In theory, there's no distinction between if you're undocumented, whether you're from Ireland or from Guatemala or from Honduras or Argentina.
And in terms of the order to declare the national emergency at the border with Mexico, what decisions can he make using that power of a national emergency?
Well, the main decision would be to put people physically on the border, the military, boots on the ground, so to speak, bringing, you know. And President Biden did the same thing, and Trump did the same thing in his first stay in the White House. So it's not something that is new at all.
Do you expect there to be many legal challenges as this progresses?
Yeah, I think there will be several legal challenges. And I just saw it's 3:30 in the morning here now, and I just saw that one of the executive orders, I think, relates to banning people from Muslim countries. Now, this happened in the first Trump regime also, and it was challenged, and it was challenged in the courts successfully.
Jim, we'll let you get to bed. We're very grateful to you for staying up to talk to us this morning. Jim O'Malley, immigration lawyer, joining us live from New York City. And Jenny Stevens is with us. She's Professor of Climate Justice at Maynooth University. Professor Stevens, you're very welcome. Donald Trump on energy, he promised and pledged to make America energy independent again, he says. It's something that his supporters repeated as well during the campaign. Is it already independent, though?
Thanks, Audrey. Good morning and great to be on the program. The United States has is already a strong petro state, some people are even calling it, with its fossil fuel dominance. But what's different here is that Donald Trump is really focusing on an unleashing fossil fuel extraction and production by accelerating oil and gas extraction, rolling back environmental protections and regulations to protect human health. And by declaring the national energy emergency, that opens up power to really have a whole new energy dominance, make America first kind of golden age of fossil fuels. That is the narrative that he is projecting. And this is, you know, in some ways shocking, of course, but also quite predicted. He's following through on, he's consistent in what he has said he will do, and what he is now putting in motion on the very first day of his presidency.
But is he also continuing what successive governments, whether they're Democratic or Republican, have done, including Joe Biden? He's just making everybody aware of what he's doing, because figures from the Interior Department in the United States showed that Joe Biden approved nearly 50% more oil and gas drilling permits for wells on federal land than Trump did in the first 3 years of his first term back in 2016. And of course, Joe Biden also approved the Willow Oil Project in Alaska.
Yes, absolutely. The Biden administration and the Obama administration before also did have a kind of all of the above energy policy. So they were promoting some fossil fuels, but they were also promoting renewable energy. And this is where Donald Trump's administration is very explicitly going to be trying to roll back and slow down and remove some of the incentives and programs that have been designed to accelerate renewable energy and electric vehicles and a transition to more energy sources beyond fossil fuels.
Yeah, he says they're going to end the so-called Green New Deal, ending wind farm construction as well, and revoking that electric vehicle mandate, as he put it. Would you imagine that revoking that EV mandate would benefit Elon Musk's Tesla company?
Well, interestingly, U.S. and foreign automakers have actually supported the electric vehicle goal. It was actually a voluntary goal of 50% electric vehicles. So obviously Tesla would benefit from that. But, you know, it's more about a bigger picture. Switching the narrative and freezing some of the unspent funds on new infrastructure that mm-hmm. have been put forward in the Biden administration to accelerate some, you know, a shift toward more renewable and electrification as well, which is part of the decarbonization and reducing greenhouse gas emissions from energy.
And the withdrawal from the Paris Climate Accord, do you worry that this will impact on other political leaders around the world in Europe? Might it encourage a slowing down, at least, of their climate commitments?
Absolutely. You know, with the U.S. pulling out, it's one of only four countries that are not part of this collective global collaborative effort to coordinate fossil fuel phase out and move toward renewables. And the other countries are Iran, Libya, and Yemen. So clearly having the United States once again outside of the Paris Accord will change the whole dynamic of the collective action and the international landscape. Okay. And he made claims that the pulling out of the Paris Accord as he was dramatically signing his executive orders in front of supporters yesterday at the Capitol, he made claims that the pulling out will save $1 trillion for the U.S. economy. But in fact, you know, the opposite is true. We're seeing, and there's growing evidence, that the costs of not taking action on climate are in fact higher. If you look at the fires in California, and all kinds of other climate disasters. So what we're seeing here is really the ultimate demonstration of corporate capture, with fossil fuel interests and billionaires calling the shots and prioritizing their interests and really obstructing climate action, not just in the United States, but internationally.
Thank you very much indeed. Jenny Stevens, Professor of Climate Justice at Maynooth University.